Hey everyone, welcome back. Greg here.
Hi, James.
And we appreciate you coming back to this next episode of Hopnology's podcasts. We wanted to talk today about growing, and in particular about starting with growing. If you're someone who's interested in growing hops and you've either never grown before or you're an established farmer and want to move into hop production, we thought we'd get into a little bit of the pros and cons there, of some of the common pitfalls that you might see, and as always, some of the fun stories that we can share that we've seen over the years of folks getting into this, succeeding and not so much.
Not so much. Yeah, there's a lot of not so much, and that has to be expected. Interesting hops and the concept of growing hops. Boy, it brings out like the dreamer in people, I think. Unless you're already a farmer, and then it's just another farming nightmare. People are really passionate about this idea of growing hops, and sometimes it can be really difficult to sort of take off those rosy glasses and really get down to the nitty-gritty and the real world reality of of growing hops. It's
Sure.
farming. It's farming at any level. It's farming.
It absolutely it is. And let's, people are passionate about it. I absolutely agree with you. And I think it's important to distinguish the different reasons they could be passionate about it. You've got on one side the what we will affectionately call the beer geek side, because there is affection in that terminology. You'll hear us use it a lot. But there are folks that just, wow, it's hops, it's beer. I love beer. This is great. I've got to try this. So
But
there's that side of them.
yeah, and I think
And
maybe that's because they want to be involved with everything that is beer, but yet they don't want to get involved with like the brewing side. So it's like, hey, this is a way for me to be more attached to the beer scene. I don't know.
in particular, you've got folks that have tried even home brewing, myself being one of them, who's tried it a couple times, looked at it and said, this is more complicated than I thought. But hey, I've grown daffodils outside. That can't be hard. And it is hard. On the flip side of the beer geek side, though, you've got the dollar signs in their eyes side, where, brewing is beer is hot, beer is exciting. There are craft breweries popping up all over the place, and ooh, you'll hear me say this a lot. I've got a quarter acre out back, and I can make some money off that with hops. And wow, don't want to pop anyone's bubbles on that one, but it is a long road to make money on hop growing unless you are very, very serious about it.
Oh, it's farming.
It
It's
is.
farming, and we get excuse me, we get accused a lot of being Debbie Downers, or as I like to call my alter ego, Captain Bringdown. People telling us, oh, you're just trying to talk your competition out of the industry. Well, guess what? We don't have any competition anymore, and we're saying the same thing. So it's about making sure people understand what they're getting into and setting their expectations correctly.
The things that we heard many, many times over the years in the workshops that we had held, the training classes, plenty of folks would come to us afterwards, and to your point, would say, "Hey, Debbie Downer." But more than that, they'd come to us and say, "Wow, that was such a great piece of education that proves to me that despite my passion for this, I am not prepared." And I would have made a tens of thousands of dollars mistake by diving into, 5 acres without knowing what you've taught me in a day. So, I'm very proud of that over the years that we've managed to, to your point, not keep competition at bay, but help prevent people from making a mistake due to lack of knowledge.
And the mistake is a monumental misinvestment of money and time. That's where the mistake is. The mistake isn't, oh, you shouldn't grow hops because of some socioeconomic reason. No, that's not it at all. It is a it's a massive requirement of time and capital. And we should maybe talk about that.
Yep, absolutely. The thing you and I've discussed, what we've called it in the past, is that, is this sustainable for you? It's something you need to understand. And there are three components of that. Is it financially sustainable? Do you have the money to throw at it? Is it physically sustainable? Because you need to be able to physically handle it, and you need people around you to help and bodies, and resources. And is it emotionally sustainable? Because this is a difficult road, and you will need to be very persistent over time. We've spoken on other podcasts about the fact that, you know, selling into a brewer, not easy at all. That's part of this process. Growing is really just the first step.
Right. So, you know, looking at somebody who wants to get into hop production, you know, let's talk about some of the right reasons. Let's talk about, is the market there, right? Are you noticing something and say, you know what, I could do this, right? I'm a plucky, resourceful kind of person. Why not? Let's take a look and see what happens. That's where most of the good entrepreneurial spirit starts. But I encourage people to not start daydreaming about things they don't understand, because pretty soon you build up this castle in your mind, right, of how fantastic this is going to be. And I've seen pictures of people growing hops online or Facebook and all these brewer parties. And that is, you know, you take your success or your pleasure out of the system where you can get it. But, you know, what you don't see are all of the mechanical breakdowns and the farming issues and disease and pests and harvesting in the rain and all those sorts of things. And so going at this with the right mindset is really, really important. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to lay that out there. But I would say another right reason to do it is that you have an interest in being connected to your community. Aside from, you know, other farmers who are looking to diversify, which, you know, I guess you can talk about that in a minute, but this idea of being connected, right, of being part of this link, this in this or a segment in the circle where it's grown and brewed and consumed all here, you know, that's got kind of a feel good vibe to it.
It absolutely does, and it's a big part of what we always talk about, the fact that this community is so important, that we all learn from each other and work with each other. It's a fun community to be a part of, if you can find your niche in it.
Yeah, niche is big. Mm-hmm. Niche is huge. I don't know, why else would you get into doing this? I guess if you were a grower, you know, or a farmer, or somebody looking to diversify their income, that certainly is an option. I would urge them to consider the fact that while the potential income from, you know, an acre of hops can be substantial, what quickly outstrips that is the cost of establishment and the cost of operation. Hop Yep. farming is a capital intensive operation, but it's, and a lot of that capital is involved in equipment and specialized equipment and things that, you know, you don't go down to the John Deere or Case or whoever and buy. So,
yep.
And much of the equipment that's out there is 40 plus years old. So keep that in mind.
And you're also talking about single time use equipment, where, you know, you need to spend a lot of money on something you use for 2 weeks out of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an impact on your time, and your scheduling is so important. The common, going down the rabbit hole here a bit, but a common thing we've seen over the years is, oh, I only need that harvesting equipment for 2 weeks a year. I'll loan it out to other growers when I'm not using it. Well, that's super, except that you all need, you know, Mother Nature being what she is, you all need it at the exact same time. So yes, the equipment piece is hugely expensive. There are certainly economies if you're already growing other things, but it depends on what those other things are.
Right.
And if you can make that balance work. If you're going from nothing to hops, yes, you need, you know, our father-in-law has said to me on multiple occasions, how do you know you need a tool if you walk into the hardware store and you don't already have one of them? And I feel like that's what you need when you start up from nothing into hop production. You kind of need one of everything.
Right, you do. And, you know, people can be scrappy. And I think hop production, small-scale, non-traditional hop production appeals to that that maker, right? I'm a maker. I love to make stuff and I love to fiddle with things. I'm mechanical by nature. I have a mind for, wiring and electronics and controls, and that stuff, gets my juices flowing. But for someone who doesn't have that background to be able to fabricate and make their own equipment, it's going to be really spendy. And certainly a lot of that equipment is for the 10 plus acres. I mean, even if you had 5 acres, and it could be hard to justify one of these hydraulic side attachment, cultivating things for your tractor for weed control, because you're looking at 15, 20, 25 grand just for that. And you get pretty scrappy at that point and figure out, how you're going to do this, because 5 acres is probably too much to do serious hand weeding on, but yet not enough to afford some of the more of the commercially available implements. So you get creative.
Sure, you have to. And even when you do buy the very expensive, already pre-built equipment, you've got to be a mechanic to a large degree, because during that 2 week period when you need it, something will break.
Oh, I guarantee it. I tell you what, running Gorse Valley Hops, it was as much as I wanted to be out selling and building the business and doing this and doing that, I was a mechanic. Because A, I couldn't afford to pay one on to have one on staff. But I also like to do it. Shh. Of course, that's no big. That's everybody in our group knew that, right? I'm the
Oh,
monkey.
yeah.
I'm the monkey wrench, right? So, I love to wrench on stuff and fabricate stuff. So I would find myself drawn to that if it had to be done. Drawn to that to do it over other stuff. But at the same time, if it didn't get done, we were screwed, right? If the pump on this on the air blast sprayer went down and we had a fungicide application to do, there's no, oh, I'll send out for somebody to fix this, because that fungicide application has to go on, because if I miss a week, I'm done. So fix it.
Oh yeah, and especially on specialty equipment like this, you can't afford a situation of, oh, this piece broke. I'm going to order one. It's going to take 10 days to get here if I expedite it and pay through the nose. 10 days is too long. You've got to figure out with your duct tape and your screwdriver how to get this thing working.
And then when you do order it, order two.
Yes.
We had a healthy storeroom of pieces and parts, and even like nuts and bolts. We had just gobs. I had, sadly enough, I was finding fewer and fewer reasons I actually had to go to the hardware store, because there
You
was
had your
just
own.
there was exactly I had my own, and then I'd have other neighbors that were either farmers or, and some of them were home brewers. They're like, "Hey, do you have such and such lure lock fitting?" As a matter of fact, I do. So
You made that up. I don't believe that's a
yeah,
real
I
thing.
it doesn't yeah, but it happened. So. It's like, hey, well, let's go over to the hardware store, James, and we'll find something. But it was, whenever I would go to get something or I'd order something, I'd order two. I mean, there would be some things I wouldn't order. I wouldn't have two roller pumps on the shelf, for a sprayer, because they're, very spendy. But being in an agricultural area, those kind of things are easy enough to run down to the implement store and get. But something that's specialized for like a Wolf harvester. That Wolf 140 that we had, that was 40 some years old, made in Germany, all metric, and that kind of stuff you just don't run out and get. And there are so many times that there were parts that shouldn't break but did, just because of their age, that I had to run to one of those just-in-time machining companies and get something like a new sprocket machined. Because it's harvest time and I can't order something from Motion Industries and wait 10 days to get it. So that's the reality, right?
Oh, sure.
I don't know.
Did
Go ahead.
did you by any chance, we've talked about your relationship with brewers and, keys to the back door and all that. Did you have those same relationships with some of these hardware companies?
Oh, absolutely. There was one in particular called McFarland's here. They're up in Sauk City, Wisconsin, rich, and that's close to where I live, and the farm was like 5 miles away, and they were an implement dealer, and mechanic, and but they also were had a True Value there. So True Value Hardware. And old school, you go great hardware store, but you go through the back and you know there's this counter, and there's like six guys standing there, all at a computer, or they're talking on the phone to somebody, every single one of them. And you're standing there and you're waiting and you're waiting and you're waiting until they get done talking about whatever, you know, the price of beans was that day. And then they're like, hey, you know, how can I help you, sort of thing. And it can be very frustrating. But then you sort of, when you're there enough, they're like, oh, hey, there's James. What sort of weird things are you going to ask for today? And I'd say, you know what? This is the part I'm looking for. You're not going to know what it's called, but I know you have it back there. Can I go back and look through the drawers? And they're like, yeah, whatever. Go ahead.
Nice.
So you go
Nice. If
back and you're like, yes, here it is. And they're like, oh, we didn't even know we had those.
or what it does.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So that was,
Oh my.
you know, I didn't quite have the keys to the back door, but I certainly got behind the counter on more than one occasion, that's for sure.
Very nice. So, you know, we've th there are How do I say this? To get into this, to get, you know, getting back to the getting into growing, I feel like there are three key pieces here before you put shovel to dirt, and that's learning about horticulture, learning about plants, learning about equipment that we've just spent some time talking about significantly, and then there's learning about business.
Oh, geez, the business part.
Because
Yeah,
I mean,
business.
business plans and especially in such a seasonal centric situation that this is, where you will go months and months just shelling out money and getting nothing back. So I think it's important that we touch on the time frame and the business side of this. We've talked about all the equipment you've got to buy, but especially if you're not already a farmer, there are insurance implications, there are tax implications that you've got to worry about.
Oh yeah, there's cost to set up a business, right? I just got in the mail, was it yesterday, the day before, the annual business license renewal for the state of Wisconsin for all of our companies. And you know, that's a cost. You know, it's like $100 a piece. And but that's a cost that you like may not even know that you have. You sign up, you go online. Most states let you set up your business online and you can go set it up. Hey, I'm an official business. What their financial impacts there? You're like, what do you mean I have to pay $100? Oh, and now I'm delinquent because I didn't pay it. What does that mean? Now I can't file my taxes because they took my license away or whatever, or it's suspended, or I'm delinquent. And yeah, it's just a nightmare. So there are those hidden costs. So I don't know. I guess we're talking about the business parts already, so we might as well continue.
It's just so critical to have a plan, have a financial plan, understand the time base of all that. When are you due to pay insurance? Understanding as well that when it comes to hops, it's going to be 3 or 4 years until you start having enough of a yield to sell anything, to make a little money back off of this. So you're looking at a wonderful little tax shelter for the first couple of years in
This is
as a
true.
best case scenario.
This is true. Yep. If you wanna hold on which to stuff money, agriculture is a good one. And don't be fooled either, listeners, that yes, out in the Pacific Northwest, they can get a mature yield in 2 years. You will not. You will not. Period. So just get that out of your head. Seeing as how you don't have 4 or 5 generations worth of experience on that growing that crop, plan on the long side for what we call cash neutrality, where you're actually breaking even. Part of running a business, I like to say, one of my favorite things is to say is decide if you're a hobby or a business, because they're not the same thing. Hobbies cost you money, businesses make you money, and you make decisions for your operation based on, you know, the where you're coming from. If you're coming up front at it from it from a hobby standpoint, then you're going to do things quite a bit differently and than you would if you were a business person and looking at it saying, this is losing me money hand over fist. It's time to cut the cord. a hobby, you're going to be like, well, you know, I'm getting into all these great parties and it's fun to be part of the beer scene. And, you know, so you've got that personal emotional investment to it. So just understand that. And it's okay. It's okay to, is there's no right or wrong. There, it's not a value judgment. It's a reality of how, where are you coming from to make your decisions?
Right, right. Absolutely. Very important to understand what you're, and that's really when you start, that's got to be your mindset. Now, if it's a hobby and it starts going really well, could it turn into a business? Sure.
Oh, yeah.
If it's a business and it's not going so well, could it devolve into a hobby? Yeah, it'll be an expensive learning experience, certainly.
Very.
But there's no saying this has to be an entirely, you know, an on-off switch, one or the other.
Right. Yep. But part of that, part of understanding whether it's a hobby or a business is try and build a business plan. And if you are all into it and you want to, and you're a numbers person and you get out your spreadsheet and you download some templates or whatever, then, and you're filling it out, the numbers will tell you whether it's a economically sustainable business or not.
Sure. And it's something that's so important that at some point we'll dedicate an hour to that conversation specifically in great detail, maybe throw some examples out there on the website.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Even when we started with the mindset of this is going to be a business, we didn't know what the hell we were doing. It was years later, I went back and looked at our first business plan and our first profit and loss projections and month over month accruals. And I just laughed. I mean, like not a chuckle, but like a belly laugh. Right. And because it was so ridiculous, but I don't know anybody. I know no one who's an entrepreneur, and we know lots of entrepreneurs and successful business people whose business plan, initial business plan lasted more than like 8 or 9 months. One of my favorite sayings is no plan survives implementation, and a business plan is a good one.
Yeah. Very, very fair. I think there's always got to be that line item that says things I didn't know I had to budget for.
Right.
And, it's really big.
Yeah. Well, or some people say, if you think you've got enough, you know, funds in that category, double it. Mm-hmm. And that's coming from a place of, you know, a little bit of sarcasm, but it's coming from a place of saying, you know what, you don't know what you don't know.
Yep.
And how do you get that information? You ask people. You talk to people. What is the reality of the situation? And I think if you're honest and concise to the point with your questions, most people are going to be happy to give you their take on it. Especially people that have been there. I just don't come up to me and say, "Hey, yeah, I'm putting together a business plan. What should I be looking for? How am I supposed to answer that?"
Yeah. That requires kind of a weekend away together in a cabin.
Yeah, right. Yep, totally.
To sketch it all out.
And
I agree with you. People love to talk about things that have worked. Folks also are, you know, if you approach it the right way, are very happy to share situations where they learned. And you've heard me say this before, and I'll say it over and over again. In any venture, you either succeed or you learn. And it's a big part of what we're doing here is explaining where we've succeeded and where we've learned. So,
well,
I
think you can succeed and learn at the same time. It's just,
well, yes.
If you succeed, you have to be cognizant. You have to purposefully pull out the learning experiences. If you don't succeed and you reflect, you can say, oh, yeah, this is what I could have done differently. This is what, you know, what I learned to do differently next time. I think it's that learning part that you talked about is more apparent when you don't succeed.
I completely agree, because it's all you can look back on.
Yeah.
It's the missed opportunities. When you win, the last thing you're worried about is saying, huh, how could I have won more? Because you're so happy that you won.
Or why?
You know, hey, yeah. I'm the king of the mountain.
Or,
you know.
Or why did I win? Right? Mm-hmm. And analyze and breaking it down. So saying, because I want to do this again, because winning feels awesome. Yeah. So I want to do this again. What did I do this last time that worked. So there's a lot of that breakdown that goes into it. And ultimately, you want to be able to bake that down into your business plan so that it's repeatable. And frankly, you're going to get to the point where you're going to need to go to the bank. Because businesses borrow money. That's what they do. And I remember when we got to that first step and I was just nervous as all hell. And we had like 3 or 4 years with the data behind us and I polished it and I had, you know, and it was, you know, part of the business plan is a marketing plan, whole nother series of topics we're going to talk about. And, you know, so I worked for months on this thing and, you know, I didn't quite put on my best suit and have my hat in my hands when I went to the bank, but, you know, I sought out a lender that was used to working with farmers and young startup farmers and went in with it and looked at it and, you know, basically graciously asked for an operating line of credit. The number that I gave them, they looked at it. They said, okay, well, how about we just go for the max and then you'll have it? I'm like, what? What do you mean? And that's what happened because they said, well, we're very pleased that you have this much detail and this much thought behind your business plan that we feel comfortable doing this. So that prep time makes a big deal. You know, it's a difference, you know, and when you're talking about running a farm and even then this was still we weren't being paid. We weren't employees at the time, but we had employees and that operating capital helped tremendously to even out, you know, so that we could continue to pay people knowing that we're going to have a big slug of income coming in 6 months, but we still have to have cash on hand to pay people. So it's sort of like, was like a checkbook sort of thing where, you know, you take some money out, you pay some money back. That sort of step allowed us to really grow to the next level and be a big boy company.
Yep. And I mean, cash management, I think you would agree was probably the single most complicated and keep me up at night situation of the entire operation.
Hands down.
Especially because of the timing as well. And to your point, the fact that, well, we're going to get a bunch of cash in 6 months. By the way, if there aren't massive hurricanes and tornadoes and God knows what else to rip our crop out of the ground before we can harvest.
Oh, and I would say cash flow and being aggravated with our brewer customers.
well, they're listening. So
I know that. Well, no, and they know this, that they are notoriously difficult to sell anything to. So, yeah.
I know I said I wanted all of that, but.
But, yeah, you know, that was yesterday, Tom. You know, today, Tom says no. So, totally different topic. Talked about that. I think that we covered the business part pretty good. Know if it's a hobby or a business. We talked about sort of equipment. The equipment side, knowing that it's not typically off the shelf kind of stuff, although it is way, way better than it used to be, even for small scale folks.
There are options out there. There are a lot of options out there. Be careful and investigate them thoroughly because, you know, there's an element of you get what you pay for in every walk of life. So cheap is not always the answer, but there are options. I agree with you there.
And so I would say, let's talk about the horticulture side now. Let's see. What do you think the biggest, and from your side, because you were the front line, I mean, you were foot soldier infantry when it came to people probably, you know, at 3:30 in the morning on a Sunday morning, probably sitting in their underwear in front of the TV and finally saying, hey, I'm going to grow hops. I want to send, you know, an email to these people and tell them I'm going to be their best customer ever.
That is 100% true. the number early morning when I would turn on my email, the number of things I would see, you know, typed on my iPad at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's 100% accurate. So I think from a growing perspective, the thing that most folks who, especially those who haven't been farmers before, expect is, hey, if I plant it, it will grow.
Right.
It's that simple. If I plant it, how do I start? Where can I always loved, where can I get some seeds?
Right.
And if you know anything about hops, you know that seeds don't exist.
Yeah. Well, they do, but you don't want to use them.
Well, right. You know, where can I get some seeds to grow hops, H-O-P-P-S? That was always one of my favorites.
Right, yep.
I think first thing out of the gate is read a book. read something about the biology around hops themselves, around the plants. Hops are a flower, which is not something that I think a lot of people really understand.
Right.
They are 80 to 90% water and have to be dried down to about 8% moisture content in order to be usable. That whole drying process, I think we'll do a month worth of podcasts on drying, where we'll just bring Dan on and let him talk while we drink coffee.
Yeah, there you go.
but there is so much to this little plant that ends up being just one facet of that overall beer equation. There is so much of it agriculturally that you need to understand. But I, getting back to your question, I would say that the number one misstep I would get from folks that just want in is thinking that they can take the garden in the backyard where, oh, my wife was growing cherry tomatoes and cucumbers, and I'm just going to put hops in there instead.
Right. I would say that the people have this idea, you touched on it, of I'll put it in the ground, it's going to grow, I'm going to get a yield, and my yield's going to be exactly what I read online, right? 1,800 to 2,200 pounds to the acre. And those numbers that are reported for yield, those are hop farms that are generational farms. Four and five generations were the farmers, and they know which varieties grow the best in their at their farm, at their specific farm, and they know how to treat those hops in order to get the most out of them. The hops that you put in your backyard or in your first acre or your first 10 acres will not hit those levels because you don't know how to tweak the production aspects, the horticulture, to get those plants to yield that high. So the next question we get is, well, where do I get that information? Well, this is the thing, this is the really, really hard part for people to accept. It really doesn't exist. You have to figure it out for yourself. And we can provide, we as educators and scientists and folks with experience can provide some very broad strokes of things to do and not to do and timing wise. But we'll also point out the area that, you know, fertilizer timing and when you prune these things back in the spring, when you train them, all these things are variety dependent. They're location dependent, and no one can give you an exact prescription for everything that you're going to do on your farm. It's not going to happen. If anybody says, I can tell you exactly when to cut your plants back and when they're going to harvest every year, they are lying to you.
Yep, it's true. You can get into the details of microclimates and exactly what's gone on in your soil over the years, but until you really get in there and start doing it, and learn, to your point, how to tweak every little thing, you just don't know. You don't know what you're going to get out of it. But the odds are much higher that what you'll get out of it is less than you were hoping for.
Well, that's exactly right. And the things that you're going to have to, the risks that you run in learning how to do this on your farm, right, on your site, are going to be hard. You know, lessons you're going to learn are going to hurt. And as we talk frequently, right? That's the tuition at the University of Mother Nature. It's steep. Every year, change it up. So it's like, well, last year I pruned at this time in the spring to control my emergence. But this year it's super warm early in the season, and now I've got to, what do I do? They're coming up early. Do I wait and let them grow? Do I cut them back multiple times? You know, what should I do?
One of my favorite, really least favorite questions and most common questions I'd receive when manning the phones and the email for Gorst Valley was, you know, sometime in mid-June, mid-July, it was, hey, how do I know when I should harvest these things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And as much as I wanted to write back, it depends, and hit send, that really was not an acceptable answer.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't.
But it's the truth.
Well, and there are so many people want, I think just in general in life, and I am no exception, people want easy buttons, right? They want easy buttons. They want to be able to mark on their calendar, this is when I have to do something. This is when I have to do something with my hops. And hops, this is not a mechanical system, right? It's not, you know, sprockets and cogs and things that work. It's not clockwork, right? It's Mother Nature. It's biology. It's a dynamic system. And the best that we can do is understand the principles behind the horticulture and behind the plant and why we are doing these things. So I think if we can teach people why we're doing them, they'll know how to adjust their schedules and their practices to best fit that why part. And
sure.
And the horticulture is a big black box, frankly, for hops.
It is. And if you're already a farmer for some other crop, you know this, that if you don't understand that crop, you're not maximizing your yield. You're not getting the most out of it and keeping your costs down. So understanding what you're growing is critical. But if you are new to this, and I feel like a lot of the folks that come ask us questions are new to this, again, coming from one of those two sides, whether it's, hey, there's money to be made, or hey, beer is cool. I don't mean that to sound so derogatory, because they're both great reasons to get into this. But understanding what you're actually doing there and understanding the plant. That plant is a living, breathing thing. Well, maybe not breathing. It's a living thing that is going to need to be treated just the right way based on what's going on in your neck of the woods. You need to really understand why it reacts, how it reacts.
Correct.
And it involves, as you said before, talking to people online, maybe taking some classes, reading whatever you can get your hands on. And there's not a lot of it out there. There is no cookbook.
Nope.
There really is no cookbook that says, if you do this, 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 this at this time and this date, you will have a basket full of beautiful hops to walk down to your brewer and hand to them. There is no book that explains that, because it would be wrong.
It would be. It would be. And there have been texts written. Rybasek from the Czech Republic wrote a book called Hop Production. I think the last revision was 1991. It is a textbook, so it's a scientific book. And if you have that book and you leaf through it, you'll see that the actual sections on cultural practices, so like tilling and cultivating and pruning, are very thin, because there really isn't one way it's done all over the globe. That's important to remember.
All over the U.S. for that matter.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, you've got, and certainly online, if you're going to online and forums and Facebook and whatnot for advice, you're going to have a lot of people telling you, you have to do this or you have to do that. You don't have to do anything. You know, what they do in Europe, right, and Poland and Germany and whatnot, they do, and their cultural practices are based around their entire production system. You don't have to do that in other places if you're not using their production system. And frankly, in a lot of cases, they don't know why they're doing it. They just discovered that over hundreds of years and generations that it works for them, for those varieties in that location. Mm-hmm. Right? They may not work the same way. And I can guarantee you it will not work the same way in Virginia or Buffalo or Nebraska, you know, or Lincoln. Keep that in mind. That there's the horticulture is way more than to go into right now, obviously, but we need to come at this with this mentality of adventure and a lust for learning, because that's if you stop, if you think you've got the answers and you don't have four or five generations behind you, you are going to likely fail at hop growing.
Now, you know, we've made a big deal about the fact that we always want to make sure to hit the three points of our triangle here, the brewer, the consumer, and the grower. So we've spent a lot of time here on the grower. Let's talk a bit about why this is so important to those other two points. I mean, as a brewer, sure. For example, as a brewer, you want to know that the folks you're buying hops from have the right business practices. You also want to know that they're in it for the long haul. If you commit to a variety that's being grown by them, that you know, maybe they've got just the right spin on that variety for you. Because let's face it, everything's a little bit different. You want to make sure you've got access to that. But as well, you know, we mentioned it earlier a little bit in jest, but the fact that, hey, you know, John wanted all this, and now I grew it, and then John said, you know what, I don't need that anymore. Thinking about what we've talked about in terms of financials and the fact that it is such a tough early road in particular to start growing and establishing that hop growing business. When you are a brewer and you're working with a grower, be cognizant of the fact that if you've made a commitment and you back out on that commitment, that could be the last straw in a business plan for someone.
Right.
Now, obviously, you're running your own business and you've got to do what's right for you. But this is not the same as, you know, getting out of a hop contract for one of the massive producers where, okay, they'll move that product somewhere else. When you're dealing with local folks who are probably working with other brewers as well, be cognizant of the fact that this is a community that you're dealing with, and shoot straight with each other.
And it happened to us more than one time.
Sure.
Where that, you know, and even in some cases on a handshake we put in, because we had long-term relationships with these brewers, and we put in acres and acres, right? And they weren't going to have contracts. Oh, we don't sign contracts. And then they go and sign a contract behind our backs with a major hop producer for the same hops that we just put in for more money than we were charging them. I don't know how that works or why that happens, but it hurt us big time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the reality, the impact of that decision is, you know, not to be taken lightly. But for our brewers, what I would say is to encourage the small scale, non-traditional local grower is to talk to them, give them information, point them in the right direction, because they're likely going to come to you asking questions about, you know, how much would you buy? Which varieties do you use? Because they're building a business plan. If you don't use conventional varieties, if all you use or the main thing that you use are the really sexy branded varieties, you know, Citra and Mosaic and Nelson Sauvin and all of these, you know, Denali, all the new stuff, your local grower doesn't have access to those. And you may not know that or not. Those are patented varieties designed by the large hop houses out west and in Europe. And they restrict the rights to grow those. So your small scale grower can't grow those. They're going to be able to grow the ones that you've known and loved for years and years and years. So be upfront with them. Tell them right off the bat, and don't expect that they're going to be able to grow you Simcoe, because it's just not going to happen. But to support them, here's one thing that, you know, in our earlier podcast, you know, we talked about collaborating. Look at wet hop beer, because that's a low barrier to entry for young startup growers, where they don't have to have a drying infrastructure, right? They can harvest these hops wet. They can get them to you. You can brew a wet hop beer, harvest ale. And I think that's a good segue into talking about the consumer side of this, where consumers are looking for what's new, what's hot, what's seasonal, what's how can we roll all this into something hip and trendy? And I think this phenomenon of local harvest ales is a good one to talk about.
And the wet hopping is a great example, because it does take away a whole piece of the growing variability of drying and processing. Mm-hmm. It just takes it off the table. You grow it, you cut it down, you're good. So that is a great way to get someone, to get a new grower into the mix. I would say, as well, as a brewer, visit your local growers if you can. See how they're doing things. Make sure you're comfortable with what you're seeing in terms of cleanliness and whatnot. But it also gives you a little more information. Not every brewer has the chance to go to the Pacific Northwest and see a full-fledged operation working there. Good to take an interest in what's going on around you, and I think it gives the grower more of a reason to try that much harder,
right?
As well, so there's a good relationship thing there.
I think that for the consumer, we've had and will have multiple conversations on this concept of local. But if we roll the whole package together, for the consumer, in the rare instance, in the rare case, there is a terroir difference. Of some varieties grown in your region, you know, your locale versus the Pacific Northwest or Europe in the rare case. But there can be everything to do with harvest timing and when that crop is taken and what is going to, you know, be a contributor to flavor and aroma and a really cool experience that you might not be able to get from the Pacific Northwest or from Europe or from South Africa or from New Zealand. Many times, you know, we invited just beer enthusiasts to come to the farm. They always wanted to see a hop harvest, much like you said, Greg, they can't get to the Pacific Northwest. But the things they didn't know about the horticulture of hops and how it gets into their beer just would astound them. And it created that much stronger of a connection. And in today's beer age, where hop producers are marketing directly to consumers to demand a certain variety, the same could be said for marketing as a grower directly to the consumer so that they demand that their brewers use your hops.
Sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
They want to feel good about the beer that they're drinking, and everything goes back to quality and price. I get it. But the quality thing is maybe less negotiable. The price thing should be negotiable. It should be a conversation because there's also investment in the community. And that, believe it or not, even though hard to track on the books, will hit the bottom line.
It will. And, you know, especially if you're running a, you know, a smaller tap room and you're a very locally oriented brewer, those, you know, you all know, you walk around the tap room from time to time, shaking people's hands, the regulars, you know, having quick conversations. And to be able to mention, oh yeah, you know, that one of the dozen things that are currently on the chalkboard up there was made from hops right up the road at such and such farm. Even if it's just the one, that puts a connotation into the consumer's mind, and it makes them think, wow, you know, this guy's in touch with the community. They understand what's going on. You know, the fact that your other nine beers are being sourced elsewhere isn't part of that conversation. It's just, hey, wow, you know, this person is like me. They're here. They're I should support them. It really does mean something.
It does. Ultimately, it does. Some brewer customers will get it. They know it will hit the bottom line, but they can't put their thumb on it. Others are going to be a pretty heavy challenge to say, you know, this is going to matter. And they're going to say, show me the data. And well, how much of that do you really want to get into? So,
right. I mean, just like we talked about a business plan for a grower, brewers, you've got them too.
Right.
And if all you see is increased cost on your hops line, but to James's point, it will hit the bottom line. It's just, it's more in the sense of volume and repeat customers and goodwill, which is always hard to quantify.
Yeah, investment in your community. It's a long-term play, but it's a critically important pillar of any good, responsible community business.
I was just going to say, as a, you know, bring this all back to community, as we always talk about, it seems like the perfect way to put a capper on this one.
Yep. Hop growing is a challenge. It's a challenge that shouldn't be shied away from, but it should be handled with care and approached from the front. she is a beast, but it can be a very, very rewarding business. And certainly if you want to be part of this local agriculture, manufacture, consumption sort of thing, farm to table concept, it's a good way to do that, but do it with eyes opened and with gloves on, and knowing that you're going to take your lumps, but that's okay. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. So
nothing wrong with it at all.
Nope.
It's just like any other venture you try to get into. And to your point earlier, whether it be a hobby or a business, I agree wholeheartedly with the eyes wide open
good
way of looking at it.
Well, there's one thing we agree on. So,
oh yes, yes. Yeah. That's the one. Hey, it's one for today.
Yeah, good. Awesome. So what's next? What do we want these people to do?
Oh, you know my spiel here. Get on the website, subscribe to the podcast if you haven't. Please leave us comments on this one or any other one. We'd love to hear from you. We want to know what you liked and didn't like. We want to know what else you want to hear. We'd love to know if you've got your own stories to share about successes or learnings from your own stint at hop production. And in particular, any kind of off-kilter and weird ways you might be growing hops. We've heard plenty of those, and you know, probably enough for an entire conversation at some point.
Mm, definitely.
Well, so thank you all, yep. And we'll see you again soon.
Until next time.